What's going on, everybody? Welcome back to another episode of Closing the Deal. I am your host, Sam Enright, and sitting across from me is my co-host, Zach Dixon. Zach, what is going on today, brother? How are you?
Oh, fantastic. Beautiful Tuesday morning here. Switched up our schedule a little bit, so trying some new things out. And super excited to get recording this morning.
Yeah, it's nice. It's in the office and nice and quiet. I know you guys can't hear it, but when we record our podcast on the weeknight evenings, we share an office with a music teacher, or teachers, I should say, plural, I think. I really don't know what's going on down there, but luckily this mic is nice enough to where it does not pick up those things for you guys, but I just sit here and listen to pianos, drums, opera music. Really, you name it, they got it going on down there. So it's nice and peaceful. It actually feels weird to be in here and it be this quiet. Like, I'm being so genuine when I say that. Like, I just feel like there should be noise somewhere, and it's just like I'm in here by myself. So
I can confirm too. Like, I've heard the drums before. Like, while we're recording, while I'm talking, I can hear the drums in my ear. I can hear somebody singing opera in my ear. It is very much more quiet, that's for sure, even coming through my headphones this morning.
Yeah, it's nice. I'm sure there's some downsides. There seems to be a little sluggish this morning, you know, just a little on the tired side, you know, don't have the full day under the belt, you know, ready to go. But I feel like we're back. It feels like we're back to almost kind of like how we started the year. You know, we were coming in on the weekend mornings, you know, not maybe this early, but, you know, getting started around 9, 10-ish. And so, does feel nice, and it will definitely feel good to have accomplished this before the day starts.
Yeah, that's how I like to operate my life in general. I'm an early riser and get the stuff done to begin with, and then have the rest of the day to you know, chill or do whatever you want to do. So this is my ideal schedule for sure, no doubt about it, on any aspect of life. You know, with golf, obviously my first preferred tee time is the first off, or, you know, anything that I'm doing on that day, I would prefer to get it done on the morning time to begin with, begin the day.
Yeah. Yep. I like to operate the same way. Get it done, get it out of the way. So I'm not a leave a bunch of tasks for later in the day type of guy. And usually if I somehow convince myself to do that, you know, whatever, sleep in or whatever the talk going on in the brain is, I usually about halfway through the day, I'm kicking myself. Like, what are we doing here? This was a horrible idea. Why do you listen to yourself, you know, when you're in bed wanting to sleep for an extra 20 minutes? Like, what is that 20 minutes in all reality truly going to do for you?
Nothing.
I got an update for you guys. It doesn't do much of anything. So, it's those days lead to quite a little bit of an annoyance, on my part, usually with myself by the time we get to day's end.
I feel you for sure. Cause if I get to the day's end with tasks to do, they are more than likely not getting done, unfortunately. Just depending on what task it is and if it's a necessity, obviously, but more than likely not getting done if it gets left for the evening time.
Yeah, I've been on that sort of schedule here lately. Just shove it to the next day, and then the next day piles up because the days don't just say, okay, we're going to wait, you know, for you to catch up from yesterday today. So it's like, then you got a whole set of new tasks the next day. So trying to correct that, honestly, because it's not a fun cycle to be in. So
no it's not. Well, today I think we have an interesting one for sure. It's our second take of our buying, foreclosure, short sales and auctions episode. Unfortunately, as we kind of told you guys previously, as we were getting ready to drop the episode, we had some technical difficulties on the editing side and with our audio coming through. We can thank my 2014, maybe 2013, I don't know, MacBook Air.
Maybe 2012. Allegedly, we don't know, you know.
We can thank that MacBook for those issues, but we are back here again at recording this episode for a second time. So yeah, super excited for this one. Thought the first one went well. We want to do it again, even better for the second one. So
Yeah, hopefully we can. I mean, I guess nobody will ever know the bar that was set on the first one. So, you know, we can ultimately just tell them this one was just as good, if not better, even if it wasn't. So,
couldn't agree more, brother. Couldn't agree more.
But yeah, like Zach said, which I don't know, maybe you said buying, foreclosure, short sales, and auctions, but still a little early. But yes, we're talking about distressed properties for you guys today. And obviously, if you guys are not familiar with what those are, kind of going to, you know, start at the beginning here and just kind of break down for you guys, you know, what a foreclosure is, what a short sale is, you know, what an auction is. That way we, you know, are all on the same playing field here of understanding. So I know most everybody's likely heard of a foreclosure, likely heard of an auction. I know short sale may be the one that's kind of a little bit less talked about, but you know, getting into the beginning here of what a foreclosure is. A foreclosure is a legal process where a lender takes ownership of a property, such as a home, when the borrower defaults on their mortgage payments or other loan obligations. So this is a very common one that people hear. Obviously, this is what will happen if you go into a circumstance where you do not pay the lender what you owe them for the loan. You sign this document. We were just out of closing last week, and every closer, every, you know, escrow, or not escrow, but every closer has a different way of saying it. But you know, they always say, pay, you stay, don't, you go. You know what I mean? So it's a document that you sign at closing, basically stating that you understand that if you do not pay your mortgage obligation, the bank has every right to come and take that property from you. And they certainly will. So this is a very real thing. We actually just had a client who, unfortunately to say, we had this happen, or he's in the process of having this happen to him, a loan that we closed not too long ago and, you know, made a couple of payments and ran into some financial hardship and has gone a couple of months without making his payments. So I'm trying to catch that back up, but this is a very real thing. And so they will start the foreclosure process on you and they will take the property if you do not pay. So I do believe, I don't know if there's like a hard, fast rule. I think ultimately, once you get to 90 or 120 days in, they're going to start looking at that process of taking the property from you if you've not made a payment for that long. So obviously, we try to avoid late payments whatsoever. But again, you know, once you get to about 3 to 4 months out of not making your payment, I would be expecting the bank to come knocking on that door and taking that property from you. So that's a foreclosure. Bank comes, basically takes your property from you, kind of like a repossession of a car. Same deal here. They're going to come take the property and then they're going to list it out there and get it off their books, you know, onto somebody else. So that would be why you would see listings on Zillow, you know, whatever MLS that say foreclosure, and they're owned by the bank. So that's a foreclosure. Zach, you want to talk a little bit about what a short sale is?
Yeah, before we get into that, just a couple questions and clarifications, you know, kind of what exactly happens in that, you know, interim period between not paying your mortgage on that first month and, you know, 4 months down the line at that point getting foreclosed on? What kind of happens in that interim? Because, you know, when we think about rentals and things like that, usually it doesn't take that long to get evicted. If you're not paying your rent off that first month, you're likely going to get evicted the very next month. So what kind of happens in that, you know, 2 to 3 month time period? Is it kind of a grace period? What does that kind of look like for a borrower?
Well, I mean, ultimately, as soon as you, especially, I guess it just depends on the time period of when you close on this property. You know what I'm saying? I mean, if you've been an on-time paying customer for 5 years, and then all of a sudden you have a 30-day late, you know, I'm sure your lender's going to reach out, or a 60-day late, your lender's going to reach out and say, hey, you know, kind of what's going on here? Obviously, we have a past history proof here of you paying for the last 5 years. So obviously something's likely going on in this person's life that's causing them to not be able to pay that, whether that's they lost their job or whether that's, you know, they had, you know, a loss in the family or they have issues medically wise and they're unable to work. You know, the list could go on of reasons as to why, you know, someone may not be paying. So first and foremost, they're going to reach out to you. It's not just, hey, if you don't make your mortgage payment for 3 months, you're not going to hear from your lender at all. And then all of a sudden, they're just going to be like, we're going to foreclose on you. No. I mean, obviously, as soon as you go late, they're going to start reaching out and wondering what the heck's going on because, again, they want their money. And so, you know, if it's one of those situations where you lost a job, like in this instance, you know, I basically read this log from this lender that was servicing this loan of all of the communication that they had had since the day that it was first late all the way up until 90 days, you know, or 120 days or whatever point they reached of how much they communicated with the borrower. They worked with him. Basically, the situation was that he lost his job. They were, they'll even look at like repayment plans for basically what situation you're in. Like if you've had a loss of income, they will recalculate, you know, kind of the payment and that sort of thing. Obviously make adjustments to the loan based on that. So they do work with you, but obviously in this case, it seemed like, you know, this gentleman, you know, had kind of just ended up, it was like, yeah, we'll get in touch with him here once a week, you know, once every 2 weeks, he'll call back and then, it, you know, we won't hear from him for a while. And then, you know, so the correspondence kind of goes from there. So if it is like one of those situations, you know, we had another client, you know, I think 2 years ago, she had, you know, run into some medical issues and just couldn't work. And so has since, you know, obviously gone into one of those payment replans and they never foreclosed on the property. They just kind of reworked around that. She's since gone back to work, gotten the, you know, again, the loan back up to where it needs to be. And so there are ways that they're again going to work with you because as we talked about in previous episodes, the last thing they want to do is come take this property from you, go list it, likely take a loss on the value of the property, everything that goes into, and we'll break that down a little bit more in this episode, but everything that goes into a foreclosure, again, you know, banks are not in the position of wanting to hold on to property. They want to collect a mortgage payment each month. They want to charge you the interest on that mortgage payment, and that's where they're going to make their money. So during that time period, you're going to receive some correspondence from them. If this is a truly just one-off, hey, something happened, couldn't make my mortgage payment, or hey, I was a little late, you know, obviously you get back up the next month is what it is. If this is a situation where it becomes a 30-day late and then it becomes a 60-day late, and now we're in a cycle where it seems like, hey, we could go, you know, 90 to 120, they're going to step in and obviously try to work that out with you. Take a look at new income documents, take a look at whatever's going on in your financial situation to try to help, you know, get through that point. And then obviously if you're just one of those people who just has zero desire to work through them, or you just don't care, or you're like, yeah, I'm just going to let this thing go, then I guess at that point, you know, you're just going to be the type of person who's not going to respond to their correspondence. And you've already made the decision in your head that you're just going to let the property go. I would strongly advise not doing that. I mean, you've pretty much blackballed yourself from buying any property unless you're going to do it in cash for like the next, you know, 4 or 5 years of your life. I mean, I know sometimes foreclosures, other loan programs, you can get in a little bit earlier than that. But, you know, for conventional, I mean, you're talking 5 to 7 years, they're not even going to touch you. You know what I mean? Like they're not even, it doesn't matter. Even if you, after the foreclosure, you have 780 credit, whatever the case may be, like they don't want any part of that. So for me, it's just not worth it in that instance.
For sure. And that's kind of where I was going with that question is ultimately, like you mentioned, they're going to pull out all the stops that they possibly can to get this deal to work out for these borrowers, you know, for on their side too. So they're collecting their money. They're going to do absolutely everything possible in their power to make sure that this kind of works out rather than take it to the foreclosure table and yeah, go through that process. Because again, they don't want to be holding those that piece of real estate, that property. And so I guess that's kind of where it differs from the eviction side of rent. You know, it's very much easier to fill an evicted space with a new renter very, very quickly and kind of recoup that lost income. And so that's why a landlord may evict you very, very quickly right after not paying your rent, is because they know that they can get somebody else in there very quickly, rather than on the sales side. That's not normally a very quick process. You can't get somebody to list the property, buy it, get moved in, you know, get and recoup all your money in a very quick process, unlike the rental side when you evict somebody. And so I think that's, like you mentioned, just the biggest thing is they're going to pull out all the stops to make sure that they can kind of work this negative situation out into a positive for everybody involved, for sure.
Yeah. I mean, it's the reason that the underwriting, you know, the underwriting side of a mortgage is what it is today. Like that's, it's as simple as that. People think that, you know, I've heard clients legitimately say to me, like, if we start asking for documents and they don't agree with, you know, what we're asking for, they're like, well, if we don't pay the mortgage, they can just come take the house back. And it's like, you guys don't understand. That's not what they want to do. They have zero desire to come take your house from you. They would rather just not give you the loan and give a loan to somebody else who's going to make their mortgage payment, then give it to you, who's likely to not pay based on all the data that they're being given, and have to deal with having to come foreclose on you. Because again, you have to think, not only does the foreclosure process doesn't happen if, hey, you just don't make your payment 1 month. So we're talking what? Potentially 3 to 4 months of not making your payment. So they're losing money there. And then you're talking about the fact that they're going to come take the property back from you. Who knows what kind of situation you're leaving the property in? You know, if you don't care enough to make your mortgage payment, are you going to care enough to upkeep the things that go on with the property? Likely not. And so now when they come take that property back from you, you know they're coming to take it back from you. So you could be the type of person who is like, oh, I don't care about them, and I'll screw them over. And then all of a sudden you leave the property in a crappy position. And then now they have to try to sell it. And if they're limited on what loan types they can offer or accept offers on, you know, now they're in a position, hey, we can only do cash or conventional. That means you're potentially sitting on the market even longer to wait for that type of buyer. And then, you know, it's just all these things. And then when that type of buyer does come along, if that's what's going on, who has the leverage here? Likely the person where I need you. You don't need me. Yep. You know what I'm saying? You need me to come get this off of your line. So I'm going to offer you lower. And so now they've sat on this property for what? You have go 4 months without a payment. And then you potentially, on best case scenario, maybe you're sitting another 2-3 months without getting it sold. Potentially longer than that, you know, 6 months. So now you're almost talking about an entire year of collecting nothing on this property, and then you go take a loss on what the purchase price was. And so that's the whole thing that people don't understand. So this thought process of like, you know, why are you guys asking for all of this? They can just come take the property if I don't make the payment. It's just the wrong way of thinking about the situation. And it's not how the banks operate. It's not what they do. And that's the reason that underwriting guidelines are what they are, is to ensure that when they put somebody into a loan, when they put somebody into this property, they're going to not have to deal with that. Obviously, you can't be perfect. Not every time is that going to work out. Sometimes there's, you know, situations, but again, they're going to do the best that they can to try to work through that with you. If it's a loss of job, if it's, I had to have this major surgery that took me out of work for 2 to 3 months, you know, that sort of thing, you know, they're going to be a little bit more understanding, help try to, you know, alleviate that situation if you get back to paying. If you're just one of those people that says, screw it and throws it to the wind, you know, obviously there's just, you know, I don't know. In my opinion, there's you're just a different type of person in general. Like, I think doing that is just lack of character, lack of integrity as a whole. You know, but that's just me.
For sure. But yeah, ultimately that is the difference between, you know, me as a landlord, I'd love that property back if I'm not collecting rent, but the bank does not want that. So that kind of takes us into the next part of our episode here, is short sales as a whole. It's kind of similar to foreclosing, but not really, you know, similar all in all. It's going to be where a short sale is a real estate transaction where a homeowner sells their property for less than the remaining balance on their mortgage with their lender's approval. So this is a scenario that's kind of similar to, again, the foreclosure process, but just a separate choice that the lender/bank can make instead of going through the foreclosure process as a whole. And so kind of by avoiding that process, they are avoiding the time that it takes that it goes into that process, and hopefully, ideally, they're, you know, cutting their losses enough to where it makes sense to just do this right away instead of, you know, spending that 6 to 8 months in that foreclosure process and then having to list it at that point. Instead, why don't we, you know, just skip the foreclosure process and go ahead and get this listed with the lender's approval at a certain price that they know is going to, you know, limit their losses a little bit. They're still going to take a loss, obviously, based on, you know, this homeowner not paying their mortgage. But if they can shorten the time frame that they're working with and still, you know, take that loss, but cut it a little bit, that's going to be a better scenario than sitting on the property with no income for 6 to 8 months and, you know, not really knowing the outcome at that point too. You never really know. Again, it could be a lot longer than 6 to 8 months. It could be a full rehab after that homeowner moves out. You got to rehab that property entirely and you now have to put it on the market, and who knows if the buyers are going to be, you know, looking for that type of property or whatever it may be. And so again, it just kind of, a short sale will kind of cut your losses a little bit and cut the time down too. So it's just a trade-off, an opportunity cost all in all. And that's the decision the lender slash bank has to make at that point when they get put into the situation where their homeowner isn't making their mortgage payments. You just have to weigh your options and determine what's going to be best for the bank at that point. They have to do that. And so ultimately, I think both of the scenarios, well, the short sale is obviously going to be a better option for the buyer, as a foreclosure wouldn't go on their credit and whatnot. But generally speaking, they're going to take a loss on both sides too. So it's a tough situation for everybody involved. Ultimately, everybody just wants to be able to make their mortgage payments on time and, you know, for 30 straight years and be good to go. But these situations do arise sometimes, unfortunately.
Yep, they certainly do. And I mean, I think you hit the nail on the head there. You know, if we're talking about why would a short sale be a thing? And ultimately, you know, if we go back to the foreclosure and we talk about, you know, a bank not collecting money for potentially upwards of 6 months or a year on a property, not to mention, you know, the loss, you know, they may take just on the overall hit to value based on whatever that, you know, client did. You know, if it's a situation where the client's willing to sell the property, get out of it, and, you know, we can cut our losses or at least mitigate our losses, you know what I mean, over that time period and not have to worry about that. That could be, you know, one of the main reasons for a short sale. So,
yeah, because ultimately, if you sell the property at 250, or you know, the mortgage balance is 300, you sell it at 250. If you sell it at 250 now versus selling it at 250 6 months down the road, you just saved yourself 6 months of holding that property with no income. So it's just like, if you know that you're going to get the price up front, you might as well just sell it now instead of going through all of the headaches, the hiccups, et cetera, yeah. Et cetera.
Yep, absolutely. Well, that brings us to our last one here, guys, which is an auction. So an auction is a public sale where a property is offered to potential buyers and the highest bidder wins. So I mean, I know we've all watched movies where, you know, you got the guy standing up in front of town hall and he just rattles off, you know, what basically sounds like gibberish to most of us. It actually might be gibberish just as a whole. I honestly have no clue. But you know, we raise the little signs with the numbers and, you know, we got 100,000 here, or we got this here. And so that's basically an auction. You know, you're going to go obviously bid on this house. You know, could be five people there, could be 10, could be 20, could be 30, 50. You know, and so I feel like the reason, I guess there's multiple reasons that you could put a house up for auction. I would say in my experience, from what I've seen, not often do you see a lot of just single buyers putting properties up for auction. I feel like we see it a lot with like estates when you have multiple parties part of this estate. You know, someone dies, you know, they leave, you know, the property in the estate, and the estate's run by the, you know, the four children or whatever the case may be, and we can't all agree on whatever. You know, we just take it to auction and, you know, we all just split our ways and call it a day. You know what I mean? So, you know, that would be, I guess, what I would normally see. I know, you know, Zach, what are some other reasons for an auction outside of, you know, kind of like an estate sale or that sort of thing?
Well, it could be in a scenario where they, you know, are just looking to drive the price up as high as possible. And maybe in a scenario where they're in a financial hardship or they need to get off this property, whether, like you mentioned, it's an estate or they're behind on their mortgage, whatever it may be. Ultimately, you're just trying to drive the price up as high as possible, you know, making people bid against each other. If multiple people walk through this property and they love it, and they start to get a little bit emotionally attached, and they see over their left during the bidding process, somebody raise that flag and they throw out a number, you know, if you're emotionally attached to the property, you're going to immediately go above that bid. So yeah. It's just like, when they want to get the very, very most kind of squeeze the orange juice out of the orange, you know, as much as you possibly can, that would be the scenario that I see most often when the sellers want to get the top dollar, the very most that they can, and kind of leave the table knowing that they did so as well. Sometimes when you just get regular offers on a property, you never really know what else you could have got you just never really know. But at an auction, it's pretty cut and dry. Obviously, there's people there bidding on the property, and if you didn't get a higher offer, there's a reason why you didn't as well. So,
yeah. Cool. Well, I mean, I guess, you know, we did talk about it a lot, you know, inside of each of these, you know, why these distressed properties become distressed, you know, when it comes to foreclosures, when it comes to short sales. You know, obviously the main one that we most typically see is going to be financial hardship for the person that owns the property themselves. You know, again, whether you have, you know, had major medical things going on, or you've lost a job, loss of income in the family, you know when you have a two borrower household where it took both incomes to get the loan, and now, you know, one of those people was laid off or, you know, can no longer work or whatever the case may be, you know, that's going to be one of the main drivers for, you know, those properties going into that distressed state. I guess market trends could also be another one of those things, you know. Obviously that could definitely create some issues. And then, I guess from a lender perspective, you know, yeah, I don't know.
I think another reason that I would throw in there is just choice, honestly. People just choosing to not take care of their property, choosing to not make the payment, is literally just what we pride ourselves on as Americans, is the freedom of choice.
Yeah, I mean, you're not wrong there, obviously. I think that obviously everybody gets to make their own choice, so you can do as you please. You could get a loan for a property and just decide to stop paying it, you know, and that's your freedom to choose so. But obviously we all know with freedoms in this country, there's also repercussions and consequences to said actions when, you know, those actions don't, I guess, you know, co-align with what reality is. Yeah. So, I mean, again, you know, I'm not sure I would ever go about doing that in that way. You know, I get obviously financial hardships. I get things that are unavoidable. But again, I'm going to work. I think there's something that was instilled in me just growing up, you know, just watching my dad, watching my mom, like when times get tough, you do whatever it takes to get yourself out of that situation. You don't just say, you know, chalk it up.
We're done.
Yeah. Whatever, we're done. You know, throw in the towel and figure it out next time. You know, that's just, I guess, not how I was, you know, raised to operate. So I do find a little disconnect in between that thought process for sure. But I mean, to each his own. Obviously, try to, you know, help mitigate all of that for you guys out here by just doing, you know, just the podcast in general, and just, you know, showing you guys ways that you can buy properties or set yourself up for success, and making sure that you're not, you know, overextending yourself. You know, that could be another reason, you know, why, you know, you could potentially find yourself in one of these situations. If you're putting yourself with a mortgage payment that legitimately your income only allows you to make your mortgage payment, you know, that, you know, you're the only person who knows your true budget on the back end, and those choices, you know, rely on you. Just because on paper you can afford something doesn't necessarily mean that you can truly afford something. So I like that. Definitely about choice. I think that's a large one in there as well.
Absolutely. Absolutely. So moving on to, we're going to talk a little bit about the pros and cons of investing in distressed properties as a whole. Some of the pros that we're going to see in these distressed properties is typically we're going to get them below market price. And so anytime you're able to get an asset, whether that's property, stock, et cetera, anytime you're able to get an asset below market value, that's going to be a win in itself for sure. You've baked in equity already for yourself to collect on the back end of this asset. And so that's going to be a win in itself, obviously. With that comes a high potential for profit. Just again, depending on the condition of the property, you could be walking into instant equity if it's in great condition, or again, you could be walking into a scenario where you have to put a little bit of money in, but also provides a higher ceiling for the total market value after the fact, or the total profit after the fact as well. And then ultimately it does lead to, you know, unique access to unique situations and opportunities as a whole. You know, you can find some very, very interesting properties for very, very good opportunities as a whole. You can, you know, 5, 6, 7, 8 unit properties for 50% below market value. You put a little bit of money into it. Now you're at 100% above your purchase price at market value. So now you have made 100% of your purchase price in profit just by finding this unique opportunity that somebody, you know, trashed to begin with, and it, you can turn it into a treasure. Again, one man's trash is another man's treasure. And that applies very, very much so in real estate for sure.
Yeah. Yeah, absolutely. I mean, and then kind of getting into the con side of things, you know, obviously there's going to be some legal and financial hurdles to go through, specifically on the financial side of things. You know, when it comes to foreclosures, short sales, you know, those sort of things, you know, there's going to be a bank involved again on the short sale, even though, you know, you may be dealing with a seller, there's going to again be a bank approval to make sure that they're okay with, you know, basically the seller paying them less than what they're owed on their mortgage. And then on a foreclosure, obviously it's full bank because the bank's taking the property back from the seller. And so with that, you know, there's a couple of things to likely be mindful of. You know, we're talking about, you know, banks are less negotiable than what sellers are, you know what I mean? So, you know, they are going to have their stipulations put in place and they're going to say, you're either going to meet this or you're not. And if you don't, no dice. We're not playing ball with you. And then if you do, great, you know? And so, you know, obviously to kind of put some real life examples in there, you know, we had a client who had offered on a foreclosed property. She had been pre-approved conventional by a previous lender and then came to us. And so she wanted to move into, you know, an FHA pre-approval. We were able to get her pre-approved FHA. I personally was not seeing the conventional approval. I don't know how the previous lender did it. But anyway, she wrote an offer based on this previous lender's pre-approval of conventional for a foreclosed property. The bank, when she went to them and said, hey, I'd like to change my offer to FHA. I want to do this. Like, I'll take care of the repairs. You know, even if they come back, they said, no, you're either going to buy this conventional or you're not going to buy it at all. And so she ended up being stuck with having to do conventional on that, even though we had pre-approved her FHA. And so, you know, it's again, a little bit less negotiable. You're not going to, you know, get that inspection report and have a list of, you know, remedies that you want to make and go to the bank and say, hey, you need to do all of this to this property, you know, in order for me to buy it. They're likely going to tell you to kick rocks and keep it moving. So it's just not, it's again, the, going back to what we talked about in the beginning, that is not their business. They are not here to sell real estate and to be in that market. Ultimately, they are wanting to just offload this property and get it off the books as quickly as they can. They're not here to, you know, go out and make sure that it looks perfect and that it, you know, meets all the requirements that you're looking for and that sort of thing. And so that's something you need to be mindful of. If you do go to offer on these properties, like Zach talked about in the pros column, you can find some unique opportunities. You can find some value in there, but you also need to be okay with what comes with that. And there's likely going to be a little bit of risk involved. There's likely going to be some things that you're going to have to fix up yourself and do yourself and be okay with that. And sometimes you're not going to be able to offer, you know, with your government backed programs. You know, they, a lot of times, you know, when it comes to foreclosures and those sort of things, they want, you know, conventional, they want cash deals. And so again, something to be mindful of from the financial side of things is that there are, you know, going to be conditions set forth and, you're going to have to meet those. And if you don't, you know, it's not going to be as lenient as it would be with a normal seller.
Couldn't agree more. I could not agree more. And just touching on a couple other real life examples, you and I actually had a client a couple of years ago that bought from a bank. The bank took the property back from the previous owner. They actually did a full rehab on it. And full disclosure, I was very, very surprised and pleasantly surprised, I should say, with how well this rehab was done by the bank. Because again, like we've touched on previously, that's not what they're in the business to do, of rehab properties and flip them and get them listed. So I was very, very pleasantly surprised with how well the rehab went for this specific client. But kind of going back to what you mentioned, the negotiation factor is definitely not there. This property was on the market for almost, I think, 100 days to begin with, and it had come down almost already 30 grand on their list price. And so we ended up offering, I think, 15% lower than the latest list price. And they came back with a counter that was like 1% under their list price. So we were just on two ends of the spectrum, you know, on this purchase price of this property. We ultimately found a middle meeting point. Yes. But to begin with, it was definitely different than a normal seller, for sure. Definitely less negotiable and things of that nature. And even when I sent a request, a remedy after the inspection period, the listing agent was like, yeah, we're not taking a look at that. We're not doing that. Okay.
Yeah.
So they did end up doing a couple of things, like small minor things, but they never read the request to remedy. They never signed it. They never did any of that. So just a real life example. So that's definitely real, for sure. But another one that I have is my broker. Actually, he started buying property around the campus area in the 90s, Ohio State campus. And so he actually worked for a broker at that point who ended up going to jail for tax evasion and fraud. And so that broker had to offload all of his properties pretty much. And my broker ended up buying them for pennies on the dollar at that point. And he is still holding at least one of them right now. So he's held it for almost 30 years. I think he said he bought it for 30 grand and now it's worth probably 450, 475. And so just holding on to that property. I mean, he's obviously rehabbed it and done things along that nature over the last 30 years, but you know, to make 400 grand by just holding a property for 30 years is remarkable, honestly. And it's more than 400 grand because he's been collecting rent every single month for the last 30 years too. So it's like double whammy. That's the power of real estate, for sure.
Yeah. And I mean, ultimately that's kind of the whole, you know, premise of talking about these properties with you guys is, you know, understanding that there are obviously opportunities out there. These are, you know, good things to look into, but also just being aware. And I think just like anything else, you know, you guys have heard us say it probably hundreds of times at this point, but it's all about expectations. It's all about understanding what you're getting yourself into, you know, and making sure that you're taking the proper steps, have the right team around you, and just, you know, being, I guess, being in the right frame of mind. You know, it's if you're somebody who is in a position where, you know, you want to get a property for, you know, with down payment assistance, and, you know, we're not working with, you know, a whole bunch of a budget, and it's those sort of things where it's like, I'm really particular. I want this, this, and this. These are likely not going to be the right properties for you. Just going to be, you know, straight up, you know, upfront with you about that. You know, it's one of those things where, you know, you're likely going to be better off, you know, just finding something that's on the market with a regular seller. Now, if you're somebody who's a little bit more flexible, you have the conventional under your belt, you have a little bit of money to work with, you have some money you can put into the property, you know, looking for these opportunities is going to be something that could potentially pay massive dividends for you down the road. So yeah, if you're a conventional buyer and someone who has, you know, some money set back and if you have some money set back and you're looking for an opportunity, these properties can be great. You know, my aunt, when she was like 20 years old, her and her husband bought a foreclosed property out in Newark for like $30,000 to $40,000, lived in it for like 4 to 5 years, and ended up selling it for high 100s. You know, we're talking like 170, 180. I think they probably put, you know, 20, 30 grand in it. But when you step away from a property, you know, even on the low end, even if they sold it for mid 100s and end up making 70, 80 grand, you know, in 5 years, it's crazy. So the opportunity is out there. Again, you just gotta kind of understand your situation, what you're looking for, and what makes the most sense for you. So, but yeah, I think that's going to wrap us, you know, on this side of things. You know, just wanted to bring you guys a little bit of an awareness on what it looks like to kind of buy these properties, what these properties are, and, you know, just something to put on your radar for, you know, if you're out there looking for homes and maybe looking for a little bit of an opportunity.
Yeah, absolutely. Because I think as a whole, you know, when home buyers start thinking about buying a home, their first thought is, you know, unapologetically, it's the realtor, it's the lender, it's the Zillow, it's the market, you know, that they don't necessarily maybe think about those distressed properties until they maybe see one on Zillow or the MLS and say, hey, an auction, what does this mean? Or, hey, a foreclosure, it's bank owned, what does this mean? And so at that point, the conversation is had with the client. And so I think when you have those kind of expectations going in, or you know, options, I should say, opportunities going into the home buying search, is just kind of, you know, opens the playing field up just a little bit more for you as a home buyer, just depending on what you're looking for as a whole. So obviously some great opportunities, and hopefully you guys found some value from the episode today.
Yeah, absolutely, guys. Well, always a pleasure. And yeah, I'll see you guys on the next episode.
Thanks for tuning in, guys. Have a great day.